It's the Criterion. It's the Criterion. 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 In Project.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Criterion Project. This is a very exciting episode of the podcast because we are here together live.
Yeah, well, you know, we're not coming at you live, but we are in the same room
recording live.
Yeah, looking at each other.
Yes,
for the first time ever in the history of the world. Momentous occasion. Rachel, why are you in my apartment? What happened?
Yes, so this is very exciting. The New York Film Festival is going on right now, mm-hmm. and I'm going to go see two of the movies at the festival. Plus, I just really wanted to support Broadway, so I'm in town, see a bunch of shows, and it's just going to be super fun.
Yeah, this is new. Rachel's New York adventure.
Woohoo!
She just had a crazy adventure on the subway getting here. And that's perfect because she's getting the whole New York experience, including coming to my apartment in Queens and recording a podcast, which everyone who comes to New York must do. It's an older tour guide.
It's a key experience.
Yeah,
that's
definitely.
For sure.
So since we are in my apartment, we're going to be talking about the apartment. Is that why we picked it? I don't think so.
Well, it's one of the kind of most iconic New York movies, mm-hmm. and they have this New York series collection going on right now. So it seemed like the perfect fit for this live episode.
That's right. Since you know Rachel's in New York, mm-hmm. and they have the New York stories, and we are in an apartment, you know, an apartment that I would say is just as iconic as the apartment from The Apartment, I think.
I don't know if you have to make spaghetti with a tennis racket.
But... Oh, of course. That's just how it goes in New York City. But yeah, we're talking about The Apartment, Billy Wilder. But actually, before we get into that, we should talk about stuff that we've been seeing lately, right? Do you mm-hmm. have something to talk about?
You go first.
Okay. So, well, you'd mentioned the New York Film Festival, mm-hmm. which I've also gone to see a couple of movies. We are both seeing movies later today, and I went to see the movie Titane, which is a French movie that won the Palme d'Or earlier this year, and it's a really crazy movie. Rachel, I don't know what you're going to make of it if you ever see it. It's like, you know, it's kind of been talked about as the movie where the woman has sex with a car, so I don't know how that's gonna be for you, but it's a really, really crazy movie. It's very intense, especially in the first half. It's like a really intense thriller, and then it becomes kind of more of a character drama from this woman who's running away and this man who is kind of like the leader of a fire brigade in France, and they have a connection. It's a very unique, exciting, interesting movie, kind of like David Cronenberg vibes to it. I think a lot of people might talk about it later in the year. I don't know what Rachel Wagner will think of it. I don't think it's something that's up her alley, but if it is something that sounds like something you might like who are listening, I definitely recommend it. It's definitely an experience, I would say that.
Yeah. Well, what I have isn't a recommendation, but it kind of has to be seen to be believed.
Okay.
Since I'm out here, you know, celebrating the best of Broadway, mm-hmm. we can celebrate the worst of Broadway. Because on Netflix right now, there is Diana the Musical. And, you know, it takes a lot for me to not like a musical.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it has to be really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really bad. It is one of the worst musicals I've ever seen. The lyrics are so bad.
Wow.
There's some of the lyrics. So
oh,
just
okay.
give you a taste.
Here's a dramatic reading from Rachel.
So they have too many bows, too many ruffles, too many frilly frumpy truffles.
Okay.
Nights like this, I envy the poor. Their parties can't be such a bloody bore.
Okay.
My son is on the telly, pouring his heart out, while his wife is on the town, acting like a tart. Feel
okay.
the groove, even the royals need to move.
Oh, boy.
Better than a Genesis, better than a wink. I will try my very best as I stumble in this dress. Mm-hmm. Darling, I'm holding my son, so let me say jolly well done.
Okay. So there you have it. So this is like a recording of the live performance,
yeah, of
right?
the play. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think I've seen one clip of it that people have been sharing on Twitter, and it looks pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a defender of Dear Evan Hansen, of mm-hmm. Cats. I mean, all I can find, this was epically bad, and it did cross over into that, like, so bad it's good kind of territory. I don't do that very often, but I was laughing my head off. If you want to watch something where you're just like, this is a thing, and the fact that they're opening on Broadway in December, I'm like, oh my gosh.
Oh, right, because it's one of those shows that was supposed to open, I think, before the pandemic. So. Well, yeah. But how, that's so weird that they have released it on Netflix even before they opened.
Yeah, I guess they thought it was going to be some kind of promotional thing, but I think it'll be the reverse.
Yeah, I've only seen people talking about how bad it is. So.
It was, and like I said, it takes a lot for me to not like a musical.
All right, well,
so
there you have
that
it.
Was a good laugh.
I'm glad that it might be, yeah, that it's kind of like a so bad it's good kind of thing. Maybe that'll be fun to watch.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, the other one, I feel like I'm the only one in the world that liked the Venom sequel.
Oh.
I thought it was really funny and weird and, I don't know, refreshing. It's not that long, so I was never bored. It's only 97 minutes, mm-hmm. and a lot of superhero movies get so long.
Oh, yeah.
And I just thought Tom Hardy was having a really good time, and as long as I'm laughing, I don't really care that much if the plot isn't that great. Mm-hmm. It was fine. If you're in the mood to try something different, I say give it a shot. I enjoyed it.
Okay. Well, you know, you're not the only person who's told me that it's kind of crazy and funny. Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely curious. I haven't seen the first Venom. Is that important?
I don't think so. I mean, there are a few little things, but if you just read up like a paragraph, you'll be fine.
Oh, yeah. I could read the Wikipedia summary. Yeah.
I don't know. There's so many superhero movies that feel all the same. So this was, to me, refreshing.
So the first one is not like... Not nearly as crazy.
I went rotten on the first one. I liked this one much better, personally.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
The pacing was better. It was way funnier. I felt like they saw what worked in the first one, and they leaned into it, which was smart.
Which was kind of like the crazy, funny stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm definitely curious about that. I might wait until it's on like streaming or something. But you know, if I have like a lazy afternoon, maybe I'll go to the movie theater, check it out. All right, so should we get into the movie proper?
Let's dive into The Apartment. This is the Best Picture winner, and it's one of the classic films of, you know, all time, The Apartment. Let's see a little summary. Bud Baxter is a minor clerk in a huge New York insurance company mm-hmm. until he discovers a quick way to climb the corporate ladder. He lends out his apartment to the executives as a place to take their mistresses. Although he often has to deal with the aftermath of their visits, one night he's left with major problem to solve. Had you seen this before?
I had seen it once before, and I remembered it pretty well, I think. But I think this time around, I liked it even more. Like, I feel like this mm-hmm. time around, it kind of hit for me a little bit more. Maybe it's because I've seen more older movies in the time. Mm-hmm. It was a long time ago when I first saw it, and I really could appreciate it in a different way.
Yeah. I mean, I love movies about work. I just find that whole topic very fascinating about kind of what we'll sacrifice and what motivates us and you know, what we're willing to kind of give up in order for success in work. All those themes I think I've always thought was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie got me from the very beginning when you see that shot of him. The floor of desks.
Yeah.
And I could just so relate to that like feeling of, I called it cubicle hell when I was in it.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I've been working from home or an independent from since 2008, because I just hated that whole environment so much.
Right.
And I can definitely imagine like wanting to do whatever it took to get out of that environment.
Yeah.
And well, so, especially something that seemingly seems so innocent at the beginning, and then it just kind of builds and builds and builds, and he has to make one sacrifice of his integrity, and then another, and another, and another, and another. It's not like he's kind of doing the big things right away. It all builds.
Definitely.
I like
that. You look at those desks in that movie, mm-hmm. and it looks almost luxurious now compared to like a cubicle, like yeah. you were saying. You know, it looks yeah. like, oh, this beautiful 1960s architecture, you know.
That's true. At least they get to breathe a little bit, as opposed to now where it's just like you don't even have any sunlight. It's just brutal.
Yeah, yeah.
I think.
Definitely, it can be. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, now you have this kind of new startup type companies that have like this kind of open office, whatever type of deal. I don't know. I haven't worked in an office like that,
just
so I don't know if that's good.
Being
enough.
Unhappy at work is the worst.
Yeah.
Because, like, whatever it is that you're doing, if you're not happy, it's so much a part of your life and your day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, except for sleep, it's the predominant thing of your life is work. And so if you're unhappy, it is brutal.
Well, and the movie makes a great way of, like, you know, taking that idea of, like, the relationship between the higher-ups and the workers and how
mm-hmm.
you might take advantage of it, or what the worker thinks they have to do in order to do well at the company,
mm-hmm.
and makes this great setup of, you know, we're going to use your apartment to have affairs, so you have to give us the key, and you can't go to your apartment, you know, you're going to have to sleep outside and
yeah.
catch a cold, and it becomes like this really great, I thought, very creative setup to explore those ideas of, like, your boss making you do things that you don't want to do, but you're like, okay, he's my boss, maybe I have to do it.
Well, and it just starts out these, like, little tiny kind of temptations in a way. Just this, I'm gonna, it's not like he is seeing mistresses, it's not like he's being unfaithful, it's not like he's just giving somebody a key. That seems so innocent, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, he has one, it kind of builds until he is more like those people
mm-hmm.
that are scumbags, you know, they see then he wants to be, and that's his final straw when he realizes that he's putting Fran in that situation, and
right.
he's like, that's it, you're not coming to my apartment, and I'm not, especially with her.
Right, because the reason why he is doing all these, you know, he's giving out the key, it's not just because, right, it's a mix of, like, it's my bosses, so I should do it,
mm-hmm.
but also the other impetus to do that is I want to rise up in this
yeah.
company, and I want to be kind of like them eventually, and
mm-hmm.
that's kind of the right, and this is the character you said Bud, right? It's how
yeah.
what they call
CC
him
Baxter.
CC Baxter,
Buddy Boy,
they call him Buddy
yeah.
Boy by the guys, which
mm-hmm.
is also, you know, very kind of sexist thing
mm-hmm.
of the time kind of talk, but yeah, played by Jack Lemmon. But you mentioned the other main character played by Shirley MacLaine,
yeah.
Fran, the elevator lady,
right?
Miss
Kubelik,
that's
yeah.
right. And I thought she was so good. She's so good in the movie. I was really, really taken by her performance,
yeah.
especially this time around.
I agree. I think they're both excellent in the film. And I mean, for playing a scumbag, Fred McMurray is great at playing a scumbag.
Mm-hmm,
he's
mm-hmm.
really good. And I think it helps the fact that, at least for me, the way I know him is like the Disney guy.
Oh,
as
right.
the absent-minded professor, and, you know, some of these other, you know, kind of that follow me boys and in roles like that. And so then to see him
play this,
giving her $100 bill, and, you know, just like, he's
so
and I think that kind of helps make him seem even more gross.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he does a great job.
He does a great job. And I think, you know, what I really loved about Shirley MacLaine's performance is that I was watching the movie and I was realizing how many other movies that I kind of don't like, or that I think are bad movies, have been clearly inspired by this one, you know, by
mm-hmm.
there's, you know, the idea, I feel like it's been done a lot in coming of age romance as well, like the, you know, kind of the guy who's kind of nebbish and he likes this girl, but the girl is in with
yeah.
like this jerk of a guy, and
yeah.
and then she has the moment with the mirror when she's like, you know, it's broken, and she's like, well,
yeah.
you know, then I can see how I feel, which is a line that I think it's a little bit, maybe it was more unique and exciting
mm-hmm.
at the time. I feel like a lot of people have tried to do lines like that, and so it has diminished a little, but I think she sells it really well, and
and
that's what I really appreciate of her performance, that it feels so, I wonder if the movie would have worked with someone else, because I see these other movies and I'm like, well, nah, I can like see through it a little bit, but with
yeah.
her, she's so committed to it, she's such a real person, she's not just, you know, this put upon tragic figure.
Yeah, there's definitely a tendency to make the manic pixie dream girl.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of with this type of character, but she's not at all. I mean, I wrote down in my notes, her depression is so real, and mm-hmm. I relate to it so much.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, and you can see where it comes from, and you can see kind of that element of self-hatred or feeling like mm-hmm. you're not worth it, and you know you feel like all that you can do is be in this relationship with this guy who's clearly, you know, doesn't care about you, but you kind of want to believe that he does because it's given you the only kind of thing in your life that's
yeah.
making you feel like you're worth something, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she, I don't know, she is so, you feel like she doesn't have really anywhere else to go, but here she has this person, but she's just kind of she doesn't realize she has the person with Baxter, you know, and it's just not until the end of the movie that she kind of, her eyes are finally kind of open and she realizes that, oh,
right.
I have this incredible person right in my life, but I didn't even see it.
And I think that's also a good part of it, is how I think for both of them, the way in which the movie creates these little misunderstandings
mm-hmm.
and these little things that, you know, makes them think that the other one's not interested in them or makes her not even consider it. I feel like it doesn't feel, it feel like it's really well written.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't
yeah.
feel like it's just a script trying to make up these things for them to not get together, but almost it feels very real because she's in the middle of this
mm-hmm.
relationship. Obviously she's has spending so much energy into that and
yeah.
focusing on that. And he, you know, there's certain things that he doesn't know, like when he gets stood up and because she isn't with the other, with Fred McMurray character.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what
my,
I'm saying.
My friend called it the happiest sad movie ever made. I think that was a really good description.
It is a very sad movie for most of it.
Yeah.
but the ending, which I wanted to talk about, I feel like the ending, because it's such a slow burn in so many ways and because they don't get together, but you get to see how, you know, vulnerable they are as people and sympathize with them. So at the end, when they finally see each other eye to eye, it was just so overwhelming.
Yeah.
was very, very moved, especially this time.
Yeah, it does. And it gives you hope in the end. And that's what you want in a good romance, is you want it to be hopeful.
Yeah. And the fact that everything has been so, you know, up to that point, kind of very cynical in terms of like how,
mm-hmm.
you know, the relationships were from these men in power and the office.
Mm-hmm.
And then to have this
yeah.
moment of like, you know, and it's been so sad too with everything that happens to Fran.
Yeah. And I also think it's somewhat helpful to have it set during the holidays.
Oh,
which is
definitely.
Like this little thing, because it's supposed to again be such a happy time. There's the big work party.
Yeah.
There's even, he has his Christmas tree set up
mm-hmm.
and everything like that. And the whole finale is on New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
I think that adds sort of a little subtle layer that's really good.
Definitely. The holidays are such a great way to set something in a moment that, you know, when you have like a character who doesn't feel happy, it just heightens everything because
mm-hmm.
it's like this festive mood, and then, you know, it becomes even more. Like, I think of something as simple as Charlie Brown Christmas, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
With that kind of melancholy feel
yeah,
to
that's,
it.
That's
it
a good
works
example.
So well because of that, because the,
mm-hmm.
you know, the comparison between what's happening around and how the character is feeling. Also, such a great last line with Shut Up and Deal, and just the fact, I love that
mm-hmm.
ending also because I think it's also because it's not all the way at the end of their story. It's not, they don't even like kiss or something, you know,
mm-hmm.
like in another romance. It's
right.
just one more step.
That's true.
He says these things and she's not even ready to say it, but she says it in the way that she can at that moment, right? Like, she says it without saying it. And
mm-hmm.
I find that also like, oh, she's doing like, you know, it feels like one step at a time. We're going to get out of this sadness, but it's going to be, you know, a process. It's
mm-hmm.
going to take some time.
Yeah, and I really like the doctor Sheldrick is the bad guy. I forget the doctor's name.
The name Dreyfus.
When he says, be a mensch, man.
Yeah.
And then you get that callback at the end when
mm-hmm.
he says, I'm going to be a mensch.
Yeah,
and I'm going to be a human being.
Yeah.
And that's such an empowering moment that I'm not going to, because here he's also, the whole movie, his character is being judged
mm-hmm.
as this Lefaria, you know, this this gigolo guy.
Yeah, because he's taking the fall for all these other guys.
Yeah. And so they think he's like a terrible person. Mm-hmm. And so then finally he's going to stand up for himself and be a human being. And that's like really good, really powerful.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. And what I was going to say is that I think that's very good. And Jack Lemmon, I have to say, he's an actor that goes like a little hot and cold for me. Mm-hmm. So it depends. Sometimes I feel like he can be like a little... I feel like that way about Jimmy Stewart too. Like sometimes he's like too much of a good guy. You know what I mean? I feel like sometimes mm-hmm. he's like too earnest. Too, we see them as kind of these all American guys, everyday heroes.
Yeah.
And sometimes it works beautifully, and sometimes it doesn't work as much. I think in here, it works pretty well. It was one of also I think from reading the backstory of the making of the movie, this was kind of a turning point for him, from going from mostly comedic guy into a little more dramatic. So I feel like he wasn't going mm-hmm. so dramatic just yet. So yeah. It was a good balance.
Yeah, I'm not as high on some like it hot as I think most people are. It's not my mm-hmm. my favorite. I feel like that's his other most iconic.
And that's role. All comedy.
Yeah. Yeah, very over the top. But yeah, in this one, he's great in this movie. And I think it's also really works in the script, the fact that he admits that he had attempted suicide once before, and mm-hmm. he still gets a fruitcake every year, that whole...
Yeah. From the... And I thought that wasn't real at first, when he was first saying it. And mm-hmm. then, of course, you see the gun, and in that moment, I was like, oh, like, you know, I thought that maybe it was real, maybe it wasn't, but mm-hmm. then it kind of confirmed it.
And yeah. And I also think it works the fact they don't show the suicide attempt, if mm-hmm. you just see the after the results. That I feel like now we'd have this big dramatic scene with her like taking the pills and stuff like that. We don't right. really see that because that's, I don't know, it's that are that would almost be too emotionally manipulative. You know, it's right. about this relationship more than it's about that moment.
It feels almost like it's one of those cases where the, you know, the censorship of the time and that kind of idea yeah. actually worked in its favor, right? Of being like, well, maybe this is too much to show. Well, you know, maybe they're going to want to cut it out, so we won't do it. And it ends up actually being stronger. Because mm-hmm. you see the pills, and you know, you see her look at the pills, and then when she finds her, and you get the whole story. We already know how sad she is. She's already told us through her performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It would be laying it on too thick, I think. And I don't know, it's just such a great script. It's got so much to think about your own life and what you would kind of sacrifice for the big opportunity, whatever it is in your particular field.
Yeah.
What would you be willing to do? Would you give out your key, you know, like what, and then what the limits would you have? Like we all have sort of those different mm-hmm. levels. And I like that it kind of makes you think about that. Plus it's a great romance. Plus it has great acting. It's yes. a beautifully shot movie too. Like I love the scene where you see the broken mirror and mm-hmm. you see the reflection back.
Yeah.
I think that's really good.
And the art direction I thought was really good and everything. I thought it was a really, really well made movie. It made me think that it just, you know, I feel like a lot of people have like maybe trouble watching older movies mm-hmm. a lot of the time. And so a movie like this, I watch it and I feel like this is a movie that you can show to someone who doesn't watch older movies mm-hmm. and they to try, you know, to show them that they maybe could get into it. I feel yeah. like it feels very, you know, modern. Mm-hmm. It feels very contemporary. It's well paced. Like it's so.
Yeah, I think so.
It's like everything is so carefully done in a way that I think it's very easy to appreciate, yeah. even if you're not used to older stuff.
So what do you think makes it a Criterion?
Well, that's perfect. Yeah, that segue into the questions, because yeah, I think it's what I was just saying. I think it's just, and you know, Billy Wilder, who's the director mm-hmm. of the movie, who co-wrote it with I.A. Diamond, and he's a very well-known director, very famous, and I think he has a bit of a mixed reputation in some places mm-hmm. because when Andrew Sarris, who is the famous, you know, film critic, wrote the American cinema book and he did like his pantheon of directors, he put Billy Wilder like pretty low.
Oh, really?
And I think because of that, a lot of like the kind of people who are into like a tourist and that kind of thing, there's a lot of mixed feelings about Billy Wilder. A lot of people really love him and a lot of people say like, well, he's not this much of an auteur. But I think he is an auteur. Like, I mean, maybe Andrew Sayers didn't like his particular style. And I actually think that Andrew Sayers changed his opinion later on.
Oh, really?
And actually said that Billy Wilder was better than he made it out at the time. But he definitely has a specific kind of thing that he's going for. He has a very, from what I've seen, very cynical eye towards a lot of things. You know, Sunset Boulevard, Ace in the Hole. I don't know if you've seen that one.
Yeah.
Very kind of satiric movies in their own way. And in The Apartment and in the other ones, he manages to bring in a lot of emotion and real human connection to those cynical stories. And this one in particular feels so, so emotional, probably the most emotional of his movies that I've seen. And I think that makes it very special.
So where do you think it lands on the criterion?
What do you think makes it a criterion?
Well, also obviously the best picture doesn't hurt.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
sure,
I think that helps. Great performances. It is a beautifully made movie. It's just a great movie, and Criterion wants to have good movies. So
yeah,
the script is so good.
Since you mentioned the best picture, there sometimes are best pictures from the past that don't hold up at all.
Yeah, especially the 80s.
Oh yeah,
I think.
Yeah. But you know, so I think it's great when you have a best picture that has stood the test of time and then really, I think, really holds up in a way that makes it very well.
It'd be in my top five favorite best picture winners. It would be,
I think, probably for me too. I would
definitely
have to look back at the list
sure.
again, but yeah, it's, I mean, it holds up beautifully.
Yeah.
We're gonna go into the pretentiousness scale thing,
yeah.
But I think it's such an accessible movie for us, I feel. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's... I mean, the fact that it does go to these darker places maybe might turn off a few people that don't want that. But other than that, I think it's pretty crowd-pleasing, so I would put it pretty low on our pretentiousness scale.
The ending, I think, makes it a real, like you were saying, inspiring, uplifting movie, very crowd-pleasing. I do think that you're right that the road to get there can get pretty, pretty sad and pretty dark.
Yeah.
It's a very... So I agree with you.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. So I would maybe get it. And I do think that the movie's trying to talk about these, like, you know, big themes. Like, it's not just popcorn entertainment. It's, like, trying to say something about people, about loneliness, about work, like you were saying, about your moral, you know, conviction. So maybe like a 4 or 5 is what I would say.
I was going to say 3 or 4.
Okay, so we're kind of
around
there. In the realm.
Yeah, definitely.
In the lower end, but not absolutely lowest.
Right, it's not like a Marvel movie or something super crowd-pleasing. And so I guess we should talk about remakes. There is a musical called Promises, Promises.
Oh, really? That's based on The Apartment?
Yeah, based on The Apartment, yeah. And so I was kind of thinking a little bit along those lines, maybe not a full musical, but I was thinking someone like Damien Chazelle might make an interesting version of this story, because he tends to focus on dreams and dreamers, and I feel like Cece Baxter is a kind of character that he would really respond to and make interesting, and be able to have kind of a modern take on the character. You could have Ryan Gosling in there as this guy who's
so Gosling and Stone reunion. Do you think?
I could see it. I think it would be good. I think they have great chemistry together. That was to me the best part about La La Land, was the chemistry between the two of them.
You think musical?
I wouldn't necessarily have to be Promises, Promises, but I think it could be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there are some similarities to La La Land from the movie. I don't know, maybe I'm just like trying to stretch the connection, but I do think there is something, like you were saying, about the dreamer and about the, there is a little bit of melancholy to La La Land too, right? There's, well, I mean, the ending's
well,
very
and certainly
melancholy.
Whiplash has those themes of dreamers and what are you
well,
willing to sacrifice,
you know,
for your
well definitely yeah, that your... very like obsessive character who like, you know, it's giving it all for the drums.
It's his favorite theme, so I just think he would make an interesting movie. I have yet to like love one of his movies. I mean, I've liked all of his movies, but okay. So maybe this would be the one that would finally I'd become a fangirl.
Yeah. It would be...
Well, you think his Neil Armstrong movie, too, was very... Kind of had that sort of...
Oh, yeah, I like that movie.
Undertone
First Man.
To it. Yeah.
Yeah, I really... I'm kind of struggling with the remake here. Because, I mean, I feel like it would just... It's interesting that you say that Promises, Promises was based on this. Because I heard of the musical. I didn't know that it was based on the movie. Because it just feels so... Like, well, we'll say this every day that we record, but it just feels so wrong to remake The Apartment, you know?
Yeah.
But you know who I thought of? And this is an impossible remake, but I would have loved to see young Renee Zellweger play Fran Kublik. Kublik. I feel like in that Shirley MacLaine performance, I really saw... it reminded me of Renee Zellweger. I'm not sure why, because mm-hmm. I don't know if she ever did a part quite like this, but I feel like she was really talented. She's still really talented, but, you know, I feel like now probably she's a little too old to play the part. Or maybe it'd be interesting to see mm-hmm. an older Miss Kublik. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know what role you would give her now, because obviously we don't have elevator girls now.
Oh, like
what would be like the modern
remake?
Equivalent? I guess a secretary?
Yeah. It would change. I was thinking about that too, of like how the work culture has changed a little bit. But I do feel like there's still ways to talk about the relationship between bosses and workers and what you're willing to do. I think I think you would have to make a more like gender mixed stuff. You know, in this movie from the 60s, you can tell very much like women have these roles in the office and men have these roles. I think if it was now, then one of the bosses would probably have to be a woman, and then maybe you could even like try to gender switch a little bit. I don't know if that would work, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But
it would be interesting to see how they would kind of, with Me Too and all that, how they'd work that into
the themes would
story.
Be relevant for sure. Would it be a good movie? Probably not. But we could give it a shot.
Although for some reason romantic comedies tend to do better with remakes than other genres. I was thinking about that the other day, because you've got Mail, which is good. You have Sabrina, the remake, which I love. There's Father of the Bride, Parent Trap.
Parent Trap.
There's a lot of good romantic comedy remakes, and I think maybe just because the building blocks are really simple, mm-hmm. and it doesn't require like, I don't know. Like, for instance, you can't remake E.T., and you know, because it's such an iconic, you know, creature design. And like, how do you even, like, whereas like a romantic comedy is more simple.
Right. Romance happens anytime, anywhere.
Yeah,
so you can
just
like transport it to like new time, a new setting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that could be interesting. I'm wondering what kind of work it would be the equivalent now.
Yeah.
It would probably have to be like some sort of like tech company or something.
Oh, probably like a Google or something.
Yeah. Maybe, you know, love at Google. Instagram and Facebook are down today. What happened? I don't know.
Well, very good. Well, if you're listening, let us know what you think, what remake you would suggest, and what you think of The Apartment. We'd love to hear your thoughts.
We definitely would. Do you have any last thoughts? I guess we both love the movie.
Yeah, I think it's a great movie. I really enjoyed rewatching it, and it's fun to be here in New York and be part of the whole like atmosphere of the city.
Definitely. You're going to go to Lincoln Center now to see the movie, and that's around, you know, where Baxter's mm-hmm. apartment is supposed to be.
That's
so you're going to get this whole like brownstones, buildings. You're going to feel right in the movie. It's going
to
be great.
I understand the need to have that perfect spot by the subway now.
Oh, yeah. There you go. It's the kind of thing that you only in New York, as they say.
So what are we going to talk about next time?
Yeah, so next time it's going to be Halloween times. So we are going to talk about, they have this new collection on the channel, which is the Universal Horror Movies. And it will depend a little bit on whether or not we can get a guest for the episode, mm-hmm. but we're going to talk about either Bride of Frankenstein or one of my personal favorites, The Black Cat, which has Boris Karloff and Bela Lugosi mm-hmm. together for the first time.
I'm excited because for my blind spot project over on my blog this month, I'm doing the 1931 Frankenstein. So that'll be a good mixture to have.
Yeah, either one would be great because they would both pair very well. I really think the story of the Universal movies and of Boris Karloff and Bela Lugosi and their careers is very interesting. Mm-hmm. So we'll get into that next time, and we can talk more about that. In the meantime, what else do we need to say? You should follow us on...
Yeah, at Criterion Pod on Twitter. Make sure you're following us there. And then if you're listening on iTunes, please leave your ratings and reviews. We really, really appreciate that. And make sure you check out me at Rachel's Reviews, all of our social media, iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes. So check that out. Also, the Hallmarkies podcast. We're gearing up for the holidays. The holiday season is coming up soon. Starting on the 22nd of October will be our first Christmas movie. And so we're really excited. We have lots of fun stuff planned, so make sure you're following over there. You'll love it.
Yeah, and you can follow me on Twitter at CocoHitsNY, and there you can see all the stuff that's going on with me, which there is stuff going on. I just can't think of it right off the top of my head. But, you know, go ahead, find me, and then you'll find out.
Yes.
All right, Rachel.
Very good.
For the first time together, let's say goodbye to the listeners.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, everybody.